Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Behind home plate, we bringing it to them all day. All day. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Birdland. Win or lose, we bringing it to you always. Always. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Orange or black, we rebuild the pack. No matter where we at, you know we coming back. Section 336, we on this, so tune in. Tune in. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Yeah, yeah. Welcome to Birdland. You know what's up? Come the boys from Section 336.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Baltimore sports fans of all ages, welcome to Section 336, next generation of Baltimore sports talk. I am your endearingly stuttering host, Matt Soroka. As always, I'm joined by the button lover, Josh Soroka.
Hey, Matt, how you doing? You getting this cold snap up in Georgia that we're getting down here?
Josh, that is an inappropriate question. It is Martin Luther King Jr. How you going to come up, open up with a question like that on today of all days? You know, have some perspective. Have some perspective, Josh.
You going to answer my question? Can I talk?
No, am I going to answer your question? Josh, do you want to know if I want to answer your question?
You asked me a question.
Don't interrupt me, Josh. Don't interrupt me until I'm finished with my comment, okay? You want to know if I want to answer your question. When you come to me asking me on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, you realize Baltimore has redlining, racism is
a real thing,
and you come to me asking about the weather on MLK Day.
I know. We got to talk about the John Angelos, Dan Connolly question.
One of the greatest videos argument I've ever watched.
Yeah, and I pulled some audio for it so we can share it. We'll get to that.
Okay.
But how about we talk a little bit first, because we got a lot to do today.
Yeah, I know. I just can't stop making jokes about it.
I know. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely when you sent me the link. So you broke the story to me, and I immediately said, "Oh, I've got some more sound. I got to trim this up and get this into my soundboard."
Yeah.
I will next week. I will have the "That's an inappropriate question" button.
Okay. We talked about getting new buttons on the show.
Forget buttons. I forgot. I'm not the button guy anymore. Did you just break something? What did you knock over?
My charger fell out of my outlet.
Okay, so that means we have a limited time to record the show.
I'm at 100%, but it goes down fast. All right. Yeah.
All right. No, you just pointed out to something. I don't deal with the buttons as much anymore. It's not as easy to do over the stream when we're not together. But what I do is T-shirts. So it might be time for a not appropriate question and John Angelos get his first T-shirt.
Ah, yeah.
That might be where we go with that.
Yeah, that's a good call.
So,
Josh, things are good here in Georgia. Went to a local museum today. Went to Atlanta.
Oh,
with
I took a trip this weekend as well.
To a museum to the I don't know what's called, the Fernbanks Museum, perhaps.
Yeah, I went to the Islands of Adventure Museum.
Okay,
so yeah, similar thing. There's roller coasters and stuff, but same type of thing.
Yeah.
And I went when it must have been the coldest day, I think, since I've moved to Florida.
Oh,
it was
really?
So cold. I was freezing.
Yeah, it's been cold here in Georgia. I don't know if it's normal or not. This is my first summer here, but it's like 30s in the morning, and it might get up to 40s, and it gets up into the low 50s this week. I don't know if that's normal or not.
I don't know the Georgia weather. I just know that for Orlando, it was cold. And do you like roller coasters?
Hate them. I used to love them. I'm too old now. I haven't been on a roller coaster in probably 10 years.
And that's my point. I'll go on some roller coasters, not the crazy ones. I'll go on the like the old style ones that just go up and down some hills, maybe some banks. I don't need to be twirled and twisted and shook around.
That's a young man's game. Yeah.
Right. So what I found is I turned into the old man at the amusement park.
Yeah.
Because while Kelly and Owen went and got on some roller coasters, I just pulled the Kindle out of my backpack and sat and read for an hour. You guys go wait in line. I'll sit here and read. And then suddenly I realized I'm the old man at the amusement park.
Yep. Yep. You are turning into dad. How does it make you feel, Josh?
You know what? I enjoyed it. I can make fun of myself, but it was a great time.
No, I'm a huge fan of let's go anywhere in public and find me a park bench and I'm good for the day. You guys do whatever you want to do, play on the playground, go shopping, do whatever. Just give me a park bench and I'm good.
No, my Kindle might start going to Camden Yards with me.
I've been known to take a book into Camden
and
Yards.
Wait on. Yeah. I know you've taken a book and I've seen you do that before. And I mean, we're going to talk to a writer today, so it's kind of an appropriate time to talk about. Yeah,
I have a good book to bring to Camden Yards. Yeah, the Fireballer. Bring that to Camden Yards.
Right. We're going to talk to Mark Stevens later about the Fireballer. And the Fireballer is interesting because it talks about a kid who had an incident when he was pitching in Little League, which is good timing as well because I signed up to be a Little League head coach this week.
Oh, you did? Those poor players.
I got a call on a Friday morning, basically saying, "Hey, we really need another coach. Can you do it?" So you are looking at the new head coach of a 9U baseball team.
Okay. We need to get some more Orioles coaches on the pod. What was that Orioles coach we had in the pod a couple years ago?
Patrick Jones.
Yeah, Patrick Jones. We need to get Patrick Jones back on here. We need to get some other coaches on here to help Josh because Josh is over his head.
Well, I was assistant coach last year, so I know the basic things. And it's 9-year-olds, so my focus is going to be just making baseball fun. But it's also the first year.
No, fun is for 7-year-olds. 9-year-olds competitive baseball.
So I have to teach 9-year-olds how to pitch. So I hope Tyler Wells is pretty free in a couple of weeks because I don't know how to pitch. I got to figure that out. The emotion of a 9-year-old.
I mean, I coached basketball for a while. I feel confident with coaching basketball. I know baseball better than any sport. But I also feel like it's the hardest sport to coach because there's so many. I mean, you just think about a pitcher and just the windup and just the nuances and how do you get a kid to, to improve their swing? It's such a harder sport to coach than the others.
And this is 9-year-olds.
It's 9-year-olds.
I already said. I told the other coaches. I said, "Hey, I don't know how you guys all do it. I'm going to address the parents on the very first practice and say my goal for this year is for the kids to love baseball like I love baseball. I don't care if we win or lose. I don't care if we're good or bad. I just want guys to have fun and enjoy the game."
But you got to teach them skills. You're going to do some YouTube videos.
Well, I was assistant coach last year, so I got some skill drills down and stuff. Okay. And I learned that a lot of last year is teaching the kids positions, who covers second base, who covers when to throw to first base and stuff like that. So I got that stuff down. I think I can handle
99% mental. Yeah.
Right. I think I can handle the 9-year-olds. Yeah. Pay attention on the bench. Look at what's going on the game on the bench. Pay attention when you're not at bat. Yeah. So I got a little bit of that, but I'm also a little concerned and nervous about being the head coach and dealing with parents. I'm scared of, not a bunch of 9-year-olds.
I'd be scared of the
9-year-olds going crazy.
Yeah, I know. Still, not 9-year-olds scare me more than parents, but I get the point. Parents can be a little bit rambunctious. My baseball question about, listen, at what age should a young man, a young ball player, be able to squeeze his glove to catch a ball? Because Silas, I don't know if I think I might need to get a new glove. No. The one glove he has is a cheap one they gave him when he went to this kind of tryout. Yeah. But he can't squeeze the ball in the mitt.
You gotta really break that glove in. Get some of that rubbing oil, put it under his pillow.
Like, I don't know if he can get his fingers all the way in. His hands are so small. He gets his fingers all the way in the glove and squeeze it. We're having trouble with the catching aspect.
I'll tell you, I worked with a bunch of 8-year-olds in the fall, and they can't catch either. Okay. So you got time. I'd say as long as you got him around the game of baseball, you've got an advantage over a lot of kids.
We go to the field almost every day in practice.
Yeah. Then you'll be
fine. We've been shying away because it's been cold. But we'll get back into it.
Yeah.
March 8th is
when it out eventually.
We start March 8th, Josh. When's your league start? practice start?
On Thursday, I have the draft.
There's a draft?
The draft. There's a draft of nine-year-olds.
Are you familiar with that? Is there a tryout?
No. There was a showcase on Saturday that you could go to and so that coaches could see your skill level.
Ooh,
I wasn't there. No, I wasn't there because I had that museum trip. So I asked the commissioner, hey, did someone, is there a scoring sheet or something about how all these kids did? There's like 90 kids signed up in the league, 90 or 100 kids in the league. 17 kids showed up for the showcase. So I'm asking the coaches, how are you drafting players? And they're like,
it must be guys they know from last year.
It's guys they know from last year and stuff. And guys, and I'm like, all right. So
it's
I'm going to this draft on Thursday. And I'm like,
yeah.
And it's like, I'll know a couple of the kids from assistant coach last year. And otherwise, I'm like, so I'm really supposed to pick off just a name and be like, Ryan. Ryan sounds like a baseball name. Give me Ryan. Like, how am I supposed to know this stuff for nine-year-olds?
You got to find his address, show up to his house, watch him go to school for a while, follow him, see how athletic he is, see if he runs to the school bus, how fast he runs. Is this, Josh, is this the same
Facebook
team you had last year and the coach left? Or is the coach still, is he coaching a different team?
He's coaching his team. I'm branching off to my own team.
Oh, so you can't even take all the players you had last year.
Is it silly as a 43-year-old man that I requested to be the Baltimore Orioles?
Yes. That's...
Or is it appropriate?
I think it's a little bit silly. I think this is your chance
to
have fun.
Is it silly to ask?
To live a fantasy?
Or should I just say, give me whatever you give me?
Yeah, and maybe get lucky and you can be the Yankees and you can, you know what it feels like to be a winner every now and then.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I did not want to be the Yankees or the Red Sox because I then have to wear that shirt and hat every Saturday morning. So I did not want
to
be.
It might be a little fun to pretend though, Josh. Wouldn't it be fun just for a day to pretend like you're the Yankees and you have Aaron Judge and you have an unlimited payroll?
I was the Padres last year. It was fun to pretend that Manny Machado was on my team.
Yeah.
So I get that.
All right.
But yeah,
can we talk about John Angelos comments?
We'll talk about that in some future. Yeah, you want to talk about John Angelos?
Yeah, let's do this. Talk about John Angelos, then we'll get to our interview with Mark Stevens, and then we'll finish with some Ravens talk.
All right, any chance we can get John Angelos and Lamar Jackson on the same stage together?
I tell you what, neither of them likes to talk to the media, so good luck with that because they both avoid any conversation with the media. And so what happened today with Dan Connolly, bless his heart, Dan Connolly takes some heat from Baltimore Orioles fans.
But he asked a great question. First time John Angelos has been available for an interview in, 3 years?
Yeah. And his defense, this was, I don't know exactly, it was some the mayor was there, Mayor Scott, our mayor.
It was about the Orioles setting up money for a foundation for Baltimore City kids.
It's called College Bound, where they promote going to college for city kids. Orioles giving $5 million towards this. A great partnership with the city.
Right, but also, the whole reason the media was there is because the Orioles and Baltimore City teased this about what it was, about talking about the long-term relationship for the Orioles and the city of Baltimore. And making this statement about the Orioles, they teased it as this: the Orioles have a big announcement in regards to their commitment to the city of Baltimore.
Right.
So,
and the context for us,
it's MLK Day.
But the context for us,
there's lots of questions about the Orioles.
Right, and this is, we've talked about this before. The context is there's this lawsuit happening between John and Lou Angelos, and Georgia and Pete, and they're all involved and. Brady Anderson's in there somewhere. And so there's all this fun drama. And the Angelos, as is their prerogative, has said nothing to the media about it, has not been in public at all. And here is the first time since all this lawsuit drama broke out.
Right.
He's in public promoting this with the media.
And to be fair, Connolly turned the whole question towards framed the question around this scholarship. He didn't say, hey, are you guys moving to Nashville? He said, hey, there's all this stuff going on about Orioles ownership. And what happens if in 5 years there's a different Orioles ownership, what happens to this scholarship?
Right.
Like, he at least brought the scholarship into it while asking the question. But clearly,
there's also such an obvious, easy out of the question. All you have to say is, hey, I appreciate the question. I'm really just focused today on talking about this, whatever, College Bound Foundation. I'll address other questions at another time.
Right.
Like, that's all I have to say. But John took it a little bit personal and got a little petty with it.
Do you want to hear a little bit of it?
Yeah, let's play a little bit of John and Dan.
Let's see if I can play it.
No, but seriously, I'm gonna take you a little bit to task on it, okay? With all due respect, that's not an appropriate subject matter for this day. This day is about young people who are attempting. And by the way, I'm gonna answer your question, but that's not appropriate. Martin Luther King. I explained earlier. What you know, a very esteemed professor once presented to a group in Baltimore City that I was a part of, and she said that only next to the state of Mississippi had there been more redlining than there had been in Baltimore City. There's a vicious, virulent amount of racism historically through this country, and part of what we're trying to do here is change that. So it's really not important. It's really not important at all in the grand scheme of things to people that are clear thinking and who mean well and have a perspective to on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, while we're talking about putting kids that don't have a shot in hell of anything because of where they were born through college, to be talking about those kinds of things. So I'm going to object to that question today in this forum before the mayor of Baltimore and all of these people.
A little direct. Why?
And that wasn't the end. He went on.
And I got more. It's a 5-minute clip, so I figured we should stop there and talk about it a little bit. Let's break this down.
I appreciate the opening. The first word.
We know about redlining. We know about Baltimore City. We know a lot of it about, because growing up knowing the Armstead Gardens area well. And we know about the racism there and stuff that was going on.
We also know that John, to his credit, has been outspoken. He's talked
after the riots.
Yep. This is not his first time putting a toe into politics here and talking about the need for change in the city. And so to his credit, he's been consistent with this message. So there's nothing wrong with that message.
Was the name Collins necessary?
Well, Judge,
a right-thinking, critical person.
Whenever you open up a statement,
when he attacks,
whenever you open up a statement, with all due respect, it means you're about to be disrespectful to the person with whatever comes next. That's a dead giveaway.
I will answer your question and then steamroll it into I object with answering that question. It's not I plead the fifth, but it's basically you're not on a stand. Answer a super stupid question.
With all due respect. And you didn't,
He immediately went on the offense and attacked about this. How did he not know this question was coming?
Well, that's the thing. Listen, with all due respect, Josh, you'd have to be a moron to ask. No, with all due respect, Steve Bisciotti is the other owner of a Baltimore sports team.
Right.
I think Steve Bisciotti talks about the same amount as John Angelos, which is to say very much.
No,
I don't think
even
Steve does the State of the Ravens anymore.
Right. No. Doesn't Steve? I think Steve does State of the Ravens every year.
So. I don't think he did it last year or the past couple of years, but I might be wrong on that. But at most, he talks once a year.
Right. All right. You want to hear some more of Johnny?
Well, no. But the point I want to say, Josh, real quick, they both don't talk very much. So if you're not going to talk very much, when you do talk, you should really try to avoid saying stupid things, because if John doesn't talk for another year, all I'm going to remember about John Angelos are these comments. And I don't think these comments represent really who John is, but that's all I'm going to remember.
No, and remember, up until today, with this John and Lou feud, Lou's always
came across
as the jerk. We were Team John.
Yeah, I'm switching over, Josh. I'm Team Lou / Brady. I'm Team Lou and Brady now. I'm switching over after this comment.
All right, let's hear some more.
Do we understand each other? Do you understand my complaint? I'm not asking you. No,
wait a second.
I want to finish my comment because I want to answer your question.
You just asked me a question. That's why I was going to comment. But you go ahead. You finish yourself.
No, I find that to be highly inappropriate, and I think that your focus is completely out of touch and has no perspective whatsoever on what real-world people face and what the real pillar and role of an organization like the Orioles and Ravens ought to be. Now, My family owns over 70% of the Orioles. You want to write that down?
I know that. Keep going.
Well, that's funny you do know. I don't think most people know that, actually.
Well, I get paid to cover your team, but go ahead.
Well, you wouldn't really know it unless you read the cap table, so I'm volunteering that to you, okay. Number one. Number two, okay, we're not going anywhere. Number three, the principal owners are Georgia and Peter Angelos. And number four, you see what we're doing here in the community. You also know that in 36 months, with an 18-month overlay of COVID, we were able to turn the entire team around. One of the top five or seven or eight or ten, I don't know, you probably do know that, reversals in the history of Major League Baseball, while also taking the minor league system from 25th to 1st. I actually don't know, and you may know this too, I don't know of any team, I did ask our folks to look at it, that have ever had two number one prospects in baseball back to back, but that there may have been others. So I just think, are you from here?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I just think that we all ought to have a little perspective on what's important in the world. And what's important in the world is what we're talking about, what you're talking about. You can find any garden variety, high value sports team or involvement. You're always going to have some controversy. But I've been very outspoken. I'm very transparent. In fact, I would invite you and all your colleagues next week, not on Martin Luther King Day. You can come back to this building. You can meet me in this office. I'll take you down on the third floor, and I'll show you the financials of the Orioles. I'll show you the governance of the Orioles. I'll show you everything you want to know, and I'll put all your questions. But today, on MLK Day, I'm not answering any of those questions.
Okay, well, let me just respond very quickly and say.
No, I don't want you to respond. Well, I'm not going to entertain those questions on Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Which is the day that you set up for us to talk to you. This is the second time that we have spoken to you in 4 years.
Openly. Let's take another question.
Let me ask one more question here.
No, I'm not going to let you ask any more questions because it's highly inappropriate on the day, on Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
I'm
going
to actually limit it to just two more questions so the mayor.
There we go.
Oh, man, that's so much good stuff. Josh, we could spend an hour on this.
I saw that
interview with Mark Stevens. We could do an hour on this.
No, I know. I went to Connolly's Twitter to see, hey, has he said anything since that? And the only thing he tweeted was the video. He tweeted the video himself and just said, how's your day going? Which I think is so great. I love Connolly so much in this argument.
Right. This is the first time Baltimore has loved Connolly so much. Even though his question was not just inappropriate, highly inappropriate. Josh, there's nothing I enjoy more.
I want to have Connolly on just to ask if he's from here.
Yeah. And just to ask him a bunch of highly inappropriate questions.
Right. Did you know that Peter Angelos owns the majority of this team?
All right. Josh, the highlight of that comment I want to wait on. But
All right.
The thing that made me laugh the most, here's the thing that I think is so wonderful. When people who are unimaginably wealthy, who own Major League Baseball teams, lecture a reporter about quote, what real people face. What? You're an owner of a baseball team. The reporter has a much better idea. The reporter is more of a real person than
what did John Angelos do to earn this team?
He was the son of a baseball owner.
Yeah, his dad did it. His dad won all those asbestos lawsuits and made a bunch of money.
His dad
bought this team and passed it on. Nepotism?
Yeah, nepotism. As if John Angelos knows what that grinds my gears, what real people face. As John, the millionaire, baseball owner knows what real people face more than anybody else. But Josh, the real highlight of that was he has been very outspoken and very transparent. Apparently, I haven't been listening when he's been so outspoken.
Oh, see.
Have you been listening?
No, he's been outspoken. He made one quote, 2 years ago about McHenry looks over the harbor. No, that's your favorite part is he's outspoken. I like him asking Connolly, are you from here? Coming from John Angelos, who we know has a house in Nashville, and all this crap is because they're talking about John Angelos wanting to take the team to his hometown of Nashville.
And Dan's been covering the Orioles his whole career.
Right.
He might be new at the Athletic, but he's been right. covering the Orioles, I think, his entire career.
This question came from Connolly and not Rock, because Angelos pays owns Rock. Angelos pays Rock. Connolly
just lost his press pass to the Camden Yards.
That's my question is, did Connolly just use his press pass? Does Connolly become the next Nasty Nestor?
Yeah. But Nasty Nestor was a heel amongst most Orioles fans. Yes. Connolly just turned the switch. He did a classic Hulk Hogan, or I don't know, a heel turn, but the opposite. A hero turn. He turned from a heel into a hero with some WWE terms.
Right. No, I've always loved Connolly, but he hasn't been the headline guy.
Yeah.
So, it's a lot of fun.
But the other thing, though, I mean, I think the takeaway is he said that next week, he'll invite him to the third floor, show him all the financials, show him, quote, everything you want to know. Everything you want to know, Dan.
Right.
Your entire life, bring all your questions. Everything you want to know is on floor three. And we're going to find out how much the Orioles have, how much is in their books. We're going to know everything, because I assume Dan would tell us, unless he can't tell us, or they have to kill him or something. I don't know. But Josh, do you anticipate Dan Connolly being invited to floor three and then open up the books for him? I mean, John, the owner, said they would. Is it going to happen?
Well, I don't know. I went onto Twitter and I did at John P. Angelos from the Section 336 account and said, can we come next week too?
Yeah, I'll come. Look at the financials.
I want to see the third floor.
Yeah. I'm gonna take a look under the books, take a look under the hood. I'm not really qualified to look at the financials. I might have to bring Dad along to look at the financials. He's more... His more expertise is in line with audits and looking at the financials, so I might have to bring him along.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't know what I don't know what to look for stuff. There.
Exactly. We'll bring an auditor.
Yeah, we'll bring an auditor, and we'll get to the bottom of this. I want to see how much they made last year, how much they are able to spend, how much they feel their organization's worth. I want to know all the details. Why couldn't we sign Carlos Correa or even Eovaldi? I want to know all the details. So hopefully Dan will get to the bottom of it, and maybe we can come along.
I hope so. It was definitely the highlight of today, because it was one of those gifts that I did not expect coming. So that finally to see the Orioles and some just fun news.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it paints the Orioles and Orioles ownership in a negative light. It's all the more reason for John to never do interviews. You want to know why John doesn't talk to the media? Well, let's just look at this.
Right.
And he's not going to ever want to talk to the media again after this.
Right. No, that's what I don't understand. The most obvious question in the world coming when you put John Angelos in front of a mic and you don't have a default answer to say.
Just deflect. Whatever.
Say, oh, yeah, we're committed.
Without getting personal, just easily deflect. Yeah.
Just. You don't have to get personal. Saying, I'm not going to speak about that. I'm letting that stuff play out in the courts. We're committed to the city of Baltimore. My family loves Baltimore. We're going to be here forever. Done.
Yeah. Done. Done. So simple. So that's the simple thing to do. And, even all weird with it.
Right. Well, right. And I think I think that's a little bit of what the Ravens are doing, too, with the whole Lamar situation. It's talking about it, weird.
Being blown out of proportion. Yes.
So we'll talk about that. Let's talk about that after the interview.
All right,
we got to talk about yesterday's game, but we're in this baseball thing. Let's get written to Mark, because I told you I read The Fireballer on my cruise, loved it, read it on the Kindle. I've got the physical copy here. Love it. Really good book. So I was excited to talk to Mark.
Section 336 is excited to be joined by author Mark Stevens with his new book, The Fireballer. Mark, welcome to Section 336.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited to talk to you about your book. I'm also excited just as an English teacher, a guy who always wanted to be an author but could never lack the discipline to actually do it. I'm excited to talk about just being an author.
You got to change that to professor now, right?
Yeah, professor now, but former, always an English teacher in my heart. So I guess to start with, your new book, The Fireballer, book about a pitcher who throws really hard. Also, the pitcher plays for Baltimore Orioles. Thus, the connection with Section 336.
Right. Little thought of.
Yeah. Mark, can you talk to us about, I guess to start with, your connection with baseball and why you chose to write this book about baseball?
Yeah, sure. So, my connection with baseball goes back to when I was about 9 or 10 years old, growing up outside Boston and becoming a huge Red Sox fan. My father listened to the Red Sox on the radio. I don't know, just any 9-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid who likes sports. I just started following baseball as a young kid, played Little League, loved the sport from that point on. I'll make a long story short. I mean, I really love writing. I love mystery novels in particular. I spent a long time writing 5 books in a mystery series that did okay as far as I'm concerned. I was thrilled to have those out. Never in a million years would have written a book about sports fiction or anything to do with baseball had a friend not mentioned this idea of writing a book about a pitcher who ruins the game, who pitches so fast that there's basically no time left to swing, that the existential state of the game is at risk, which I think in some ways we're pretty close to if you watch Aroldis Chapman at 105.8 or whatever the record is, or Jordan Hicks with the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, even 100, 102 is a ridiculously fast pitch to try to hit. So he planted this seed of an idea for me, and I liked it. And I went home that night and came up with sort of the other half of the book, the emotional side of the story just kind of fell out of the sky. My writer brain must have been percolating with the idea. I wasn't really thinking about it, but then I thought of the human side of me. What if something had happened to this guy in Little League? And my writer brain just locked on this, and I dove in, much to my own surprise.
Yeah, because you go into a lot of that emotion of a pitcher, and it's good timing because we had Tyler Wells join us last week, and he talked a lot about the mental aspect of pitching. And now we're talking to you in the same concept of, yeah, on the surface, it's about this pitcher that throws so hard that they wonder if they should change rules of baseball, how baseball reacts to this. But you also have this 20-year-old, 22-year-old kid still who's mentally going through this process as well. And we all know that is a big hard thing on pitching.
You know, well, first of all, your interview with Tyler Wells was fantastic, you guys. And you, what a great guy, what an easygoing, you know, pleasant guy to talk to, and just sort of took me inside a pitcher's head. I thought that was a fantastic. I just tried to capture as best I could what it would be like. I mean, phenoms and all the pressure that's on them, of course, that's the added wrinkle to it. And he is just, he's still a grasshopper in the big world of big league pitching. But at the same time, he has spent the last 10 years in his head and in his own private situation. I won't give too much of the plot away, but he's just bared down on being a dynamite pitcher and focused on nothing else. And in some ways, you know, if you do focus on one thing and do only one thing for a long period of time, you're going to get better at it. So that was the idea.
And there's that human side of Frank Rider. And then there's this other side that I'm super interested in, where there's all these like baseball is in this weird place. You mentioned about the rule changes and pitchers are throwing harder now. And how does baseball respond to that? And they're starting to respond a little bit with some rule changes. But the other side of that is that baseball has been going through this change of the unwritten rules, right? And it feels like over the past maybe even 10 years, 15 years, those unwritten rules, as younger players come in and maybe don't follow those unwritten rules, a little more showy. And it seems to be this kind of generational divide between how to view these unwritten rules. Personally, I kind of like the unwritten rules. I think it's like on a moral level, it's dumb to throw at a 95 mile per hour fastball at someone. Like that's morally feels wrong. On the other hand, like it brings up this added kind of intensity and tension between the teams, which is kind of cool. And I like it. So what was your approach talking about how to write about kind of these unwritten rules that everyone in baseball is kind of aware of, but they're unwritten?
Right.
Well, in the case of the novel, I mean, I had to deal with it head on because the situation that Frank Rider finds himself in is he is obligated by those unwritten rules to go out there and do something, which is the exact, precise, utter thing that is the last thing in the world he would want to do, given what happened to him in Little League as a 12-year-old. So there's this tremendous paradox, and I'm not trying to, you know, bring too much credit to this. This just evolved as the story as I wrote it. But the very thing that makes him such a compelling pitcher in the major leagues and his ability to do that, and I will give away part of the story, is the same, very same thing. His ability to throw a ball at a very high speed is what took a life when he was a little leaguer. So there's this tremendous paradox with that. And then given the pressure of being a new kid on the block, the new pitcher with the Orioles, he is put in a situation in a game against Tampa Bay where one of his players gets hit because he had been a little bit too showy on the bases. And so Frank is the pitcher that day, and he is expected to go out and plunk an opponent. And everybody knows it. And of course, in fiction, it's great to have your main characters face their darkest fears. And that's the situation that Frank found himself in. So, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? The unwritten rules. I mean, even the whole cheating business with the Astros a few years ago. I mean, cheating, the unwritten rule goes that if you can cheat, do it. Get away with it. And that's sort of one of the unwritten rules. And who knows how much cheating is going on there to this day. That's just not getting caught. I think Tim Kirchen
but if you bring in iPads, that's too much cheating. Like there's these blurred lines where it's not even clear.
Or the big change. Well, that happened last season specifically with pitchers with the spider tack where everyone's been using this for years. No big deal. Suddenly, someone talked about it and now we got to ban spider tack.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get through this ridiculous charade of pitchers walking off the mound, getting their hands checked, and okay, fine.
I know it's a silly, funny, interesting part of the game. There's so many of these kind of quirky things from bat flips to spider tack, all these kind of weird unwritten things. I was, you know, there's also something about, Frank Rider throwing 110 miles per hour. There's something really, and he was to sell out crowds because, of course, everybody wants to see 110 mile per hour fastball. And there is something to this, right? I remember as a kid, my favorite pitcher, or one of my favorite pitchers for the Orioles, my favorite was Mike Mussina, but my next favorite guy was Armando Benitez, only because Armando Benitez could throw the ball 100 miles per hour. And there's one specific game in 1998 where he beams Tino Martinez because Bernie Williams hit a home run, and it led to this famous brawl where Daryl Strawberry goes in the Orioles dugout and starts punching people. But there's something about, which goes back to the unwritten rule stuff, but there's something about someone who throws really hard that just, it's exciting, right? It's not even the fact that he gets everybody out. It's that he gets everybody out throwing the ball that hard. What is it about like a guy that throws the ball hard it's everybody's favorite player, right? The guy who throws the ball hard.
Well, yeah. And I think it's thrilling. A lot of people don't like pitcher's duels, but when you really consider just the batter and the pitcher, just that dynamic right there alone, both the pitcher's ability at that distance to spot pitches and do it so carefully and so with such a choreographed way, and they know exactly where they want to put it and how they want to, you know, sort of just toy with the batter. When you see a pitcher basically own a batter from the very first moment they walk in the box and they're just completely in charge, the batter has no chance. That's just it's like watching Michael Jordan. It's like watching Bobby Orr. It's like watching Tom Brady, I guess, if you want to pick somebody else who might be playing tonight. But, these are just at another level. And then you flip it around the batter's perspective, the sheer idea of being able to stand in a box, first of all, with your knees not completely buckling just at the sheer thought of what's coming at you. And then if you put on top of that the question of if you're going to swing, where you're going to swing, how you're going to swing, it's ridiculous. It's a 0.3 second issue at 105 mile an hour. That's an amazing athletic feat.
Yeah. I also wonder, like, baseball is the sport that I feel like, at least by perception, remains the one sport, the one kind of the major sports that feels attainable for anybody, right? Like, if I'm not 6'10", I'm not going to play basketball. Like, to play football, you have to have a certain build. But we see baseball players of all shapes and sizes. And so that makes it, like, seem like, oh, I can be. And as a kid, I wanted to be a baseball player like many other kids. And my hiccup was when I got to high school and they started throwing, like, curveballs and changeups and other pitchers that weren't fastballs. I was like, this is too much for me. But then one – and I
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA, so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think your book addresses this some. When pitchers start throwing faster and harder and harder and harder, like, that's something that's not attainable for everybody. And it makes it almost appear, right, that this is becomes this elite, athletic, unattainable feat. And we're in a situation with baseball right now where it used to be, Aroldis Chapman used to be really unique. Armando Benitez used to be really unique because he could throw 100 miles per hour in 2011 or whatever. But now, I mean, we see, I mean, the Orioles have a couple guys in their bullpen who can throw 100. It's rare to see a bullpen that doesn't have one or two guys that can throw 100 miles per hour.
As strength, conditioning, and more gets better, we're going to have a Frank Rider.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder if there's something kind of unappealing about this, that this could have a negative impact, as this kind of feels unattainable, not to mention if hitters can't hit it, that hurts the sport a little bit if there's no longer any offense. And I thought it was really interesting how your book kind of took up those issues.
Well, thanks. I mean, I think that's the crux of it, and clearly baseball is trying to give the offense a jolt with larger bases to try to increase base stealing, to ban shifts so that the defense has to play on equal sides of the base, which in my mind is flat out absurd. If the pitchers can't make that adjustment, I'm not impressed, I guess. That's just one guy's opinion. I mean, but clearly baseball is trying to get more going with offense, and yet at the same time cut down on the time a game takes by running these ghost runners out there in the 10th inning if it's a tie game, which I think is another horror show, in my personal opinion. the only bases ever unearned in baseball, where you just are starting on second base in a tie game, which that goes against every bit of baseball history and heritage, I think. But that's the game is the game is the rules, right? The game is completely tinkerable, and they are tinkering with it to this day to try to get the offense back. And I guess most fans want to see some hits and triples and, doubles. So
I mean, we just saw the DH rule come into effect across the board. So it is. Yeah. It's baseball balancing out and focus on that long ball.
Yeah. Well, I think another interesting thing that your book ticks up, and again, by the way, all this stuff, I think for me, not just makes your book really interesting, but also just baseball as a topic so fascinating to think about and to write about all these kind of the fact that numbers do matter, right? The fact that every rule change affects these numbers that have been established. I mean, base stealing numbers are going to have like a post large base versus smaller base, stolen base not numbers that we have to discuss. And the other thing is the analytics, right? And we see that brought up in your book with the Orioles general manager promoting analytics and throwing out some ideas in terms of analytics, which also is having an impact on, I think, how we view the game of baseball and how maybe people view the game differently, right?
Yeah. I thought, and again, going back to your chat with Tyler Wells, and like he said, you're going to hear every single different opinion out there from pitchers about all issues involving baseball, but his take was pretty interesting. There are some really useful things that analytics can help show you what you're doing, what your tendencies are, things like that. But at the same time, in the end, when you're out there throwing a ball, if your head is cluttered with all this stuff and trying to perform this, what can be just a very flowing kind of event where you just want to be in the moment, I would think that the dump of analytics into your head would just mess with your mind. And I think it's another part of an athlete's ability to separate all that coaching and advice and then just get out there and just freaking do your job, which is an amazing, amazing thing to pull off.
We talk a lot about baseball and how just baseball is set for stories. And it's like, there's constantly storybook endings, magical moments in baseball. How do you write that in your book, but not make it feel like a fairy tale? Because baseball so many times in real life feels like a fairy tale.
That is a great question. I never really thought about it that way, Josh. I really like that thought. And I guess I was a little afraid of doing that. And I don't know, readers will have to tell me if I kind of went into that trope a little too hard, or if the ending feels like something that's plausible/not plausible. I don't know. I'm getting a lot of different feedback from readers. But here's the thing, this book to me is about two things. It's about baseball, but without giving too much away, it's also about mental health. And I don't want to make it sound like a downer book for that reason. I hope it's not, but I think mental health is a huge part of issues going on in our society right now. And this particular mental health challenge for this guy, Frank, you know, it was an accident, and accidents happen all the time in our life and in our world. So when I came to wrap up the ending, you know, I knew that the baseball side of it was there, and that's manageable as a writer. You can orchestrate Game 7 of the World Series any way you want to. But the real human story for Frank was to complete his mental health journey. And that, to me, just spoke a different kind of ending where he would have to go do something, because I was basically putting his soul back together. That's what I hoped I was doing in the end, that he had such a troubled soul from the moment that thing happened all the way through high school, and his parents wouldn't let him play ball. They moved him out of state. They tried to protect him in the best way they probably could to make sure that there was no repeat, but he never really, really addressed what happened to him. And so the ending grew out more out of the mental health side of it than from the baseball side of it. At least I hope that was my goal.
Right. No, I do. I think Frank Ryder comes across as a very, you said, very human character, because he has this kind of heroic ability to throw a fastball really hard, but he also is very flawed, right? He's flawed. He might be good intention, but he has weaknesses. He also has, right, the ghosts around him that kind of prevent him from being the person he should be. And so he feels very much like a human character. Going back to our interview last week with Tyler Wells, he reminded us of that too, right? Like he might throw in front of all these fans, but once the season ends, he just goes back and lives his life, right? And deals with whatever stuff he has to deal with. And all players, right, are living out their own identities, dealing with whatever path in the past, whatever demons they're dealing with. We all have things that we go through. So yeah, I thought that was neat and well done. Josh, did you have a follow-up question? Or I want to get to why the Orioles, but if you have a follow-up question.
No, and about... that's exactly my because it is. That's where I'm going as well, because at moments, Frank did remind me of Chris Davis. As this guy who's just a monster that if everything clicks together, he is scary at the plate. So on the opposite side, and the Chris Davis way, he flamed out, according to the Orioles. I took a cruise last month and was forced to rest for the cruise. So this book got me through that, a good portion of that. And it was interesting to share with my wife, who is not from Baltimore or Maryland, some of the parts in the book, because I'm at points I'm like, okay, Mark knows the area. He knows what's going on. But then every now and then I'd see like Oriole Nation and I'm like, oh, that should say Birdland. I know he's not a Birdland member, but my wife, didn't notice it. I'm like, oh, well, see, I saw Orioles Nation, and the first thing that popped in my head was Red Sox fan, because I think of Red Sox Nation. Oh. But that's a minor. That was just a minor thing that stood out. For the most part, I'm like, oh, he's hitting the key points. He's got the right. He's got Park's names right for going and working out.
Yeah.
You got Boogs. You got all the classic parts. So why did you settle on the Orioles? Because again, we're not a storybook franchise. We don't have a well-loved owner.
Yeah.
We're really up and coming. Franchise, yeah.
But yeah, why the Orioles in 2023?
Yeah. Well, the answer is pretty straightforward. Part of it is just sort of analyzing it as a writer coming in to try to develop your scene, your setting, all that good stuff. And the other part of it had to do with reality. And I did want to try to ground this story in baseball reality today. And I knew that the number one draft pick would unfortunately go to one of the worst teams in the league, right? I started writing this book in summer of 2018. I finished it up in the summer of 2019. But right from the start, I wanted an American League team. I'm originally an American League guy. I wanted one of the old – I know the Orioles only go back to the 50s. They're not like the roots like the Yankees or anything like that, but still, to me, from my perspective, they're a classic American League team. And, you know, this gets into a sort of a fuzzy area. I don't pretend to be a Baltimore citizen or anything, but there's also this issue of reflected glory and how a city's pride deals with, you know, how their sports teams are doing somehow has to do with how the city feels about itself. And, you know, Baltimore's gone through some rough times. So every city basically has. But it just seemed there's so much character and history there. Babe Ruth, you know, just all those great, the issue of the Baltimore Orioles getting back to those glory days. I mean, you know, what fan doesn't want a true fan of the Orioles like you guys and all the followers of this podcast? They want to see the plan. They want to know, you know, what's the plan? Where's the Orioles? Why aren't we like it was in the late 1960s? Where is the effort to get back? And that the current state of the Orioles, at least since, what was it, 2014? Or when was their last big year somewhere?
Yeah, 16.
Okay. Yeah.
12, 14, 16, we had fun.
But it's been a little slide since then. So it just seemed to me, there's so much history there. It just seemed to be a good fit for what I was trying to do. So I did my best.
I actually think it works. I think it really works well on a couple different levels. One is, you're right, it has that kind of a glorious past going back to Cal Ripken, but even before that with Brooks Robinson and Eddie Murray and Earl Weaver and Jim Palmer. But then the recency, and I think that fits in with some of these kind of old school unwritten rules. But then you also have on the other end of the spectrum, since 2019, Mike Elias has been here, who very much, and Sigma Adele, who very much represent this analytics, this kind of new way of thinking about baseball, which is very much in the line of the GM in your book. So I think it actually mirrors quite well recently what we've seen here with the Orioles. So I think it's a good it's a good pick.
Well, and I so appreciate the Orioles putting on a show this year. I mean, 2022 is a fantastic year, and I knew the book was coming out, of course. And I mean, it just was like, thank you. It really shows that, it really was one key player in a way, Adley Rutschman, you know, coming in. Mm-hmm. In my mind, he just, you know, the record after he joined was phenomenal. And it shows you what one player can do. And just that spark, that energy that team had, it was so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and then the moment then becomes, and this is the conversation we're having now in Baltimore, similar to the conversations happening in your book. Okay, we have this one great player. We don't want to mess this up. We need to get other good players around him to make sure we don't mess up this one good player. So hopefully the Orioles can, in fact, do that. The GM, can I just ask, the GM in the book was, she is a female. Was there, what was your thinking making in a kind of male-dominated world of baseball, making the GM for the Orioles a female?
Well, there are some executives coming up in teams and with the major leagues that are female. And, you know, again, the fiction writer side of me was like, man, I got a lot of guys in this book. A lot of guys, you know, when you get into the manager, the coaches, they're all going to be guys. So why couldn't the front office be a little bit cutting edge on that score? So I wanted some female action is somewhere in there, in addition to all the heavy testosterone clubhouse scenes and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the assistant GM or assistant to the GM, I don't know how it's worded for the Orioles, is a female as well. So you're right. A lot of, we're seeing that more commonly now in baseball. In terms of writing, Mark, I also noticed this goes kind of tails off Josh's question. In the book, is there, like, you use fictitious names for players, but like when you talk about announcers, like for ESPN, you'll use their names. I'm just curious, like, how do you make decisions when to use a name, when not to use a real name?
Yeah, the original draft, when I turned it into my agent, had a lot more real players in there. I thought I could just use the Cubs lineup right down the row and not have a problem. He pointed out that, you know, you just have too much player movement, that by the time the book comes out, and it ended up taking over a year and a half to sell, you just have too much churning. And so, you know, it was a judgment call on the players. I went with what my agent's best thinking was to make those all fictitious, other than players from the past, because they are done. They're not going anywhere. But with the...
Oh, I like that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So with the announcers, again, there's a little more stability there. You know, Jessica Mendoza, Tim Kirchen, Buster Olney, the Baseball Tonight podcast people, and some other announcers get mentions here and there. And again, there was a little less risk of them having moved off. And if they did, that would be a little more explainable than, again, trying to ground that reader in the moment and not try to get them so confused if they picture, you know, their favorite third baseman, Chris Bryant, in a Cubs uniform, but now he's with the Rockies. By the time the book comes out, you're just kind of screwed.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you don't want anything to take you out of the story.
I
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I made up some names. Made up some names.
You can have more fun as a writer, right? To make up some names.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I actually went back and I pulled old rosters off of previous teams, just mixed and matched some names, just to have some.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. If we can go back for a minute to the unwritten rule stuff, because I'm sorry, to the changing of the rules. I think we've seen this with all sports. Like, I don't want to pick on baseball. We've seen this with all sports. As the game has evolved, you make rules that make it more entertaining for the people at home watching on TV, right? I think all sports do this.
Football is notorious for it.
Yes, every year.
Having the rules committee try to balance offense and defense every single year.
Every single year.
Baseball is starting to catch up with that.
But we have the players union, which likes to, so they can't, you know, the commissioner can't just do whatever he wants. It's a long process. As a baseball fan, Mark, what are your thoughts on these rule changes? should we be meeting every summer, like, or every offseason, like football does, and thinking about how can we make the game more entertaining? Or because of the rich history with baseball, should we kind of just let it go and get our hands off?
Good question. I think it doesn't hurt to get together and chat and see what everybody thinks, you know, and see how the rules committee, what their analysis is. But, you know, I'm down with your suggestion, Matt, which is let's let it go for a few years. Let's let it be for a few years. Let's get the fans used to the rules and not have to go through this big explanation every year. And I can't say Major League Baseball has done too much of that in my mind. The basics are still the basics, and that's what connects baseball back for decades and decades. You know, three strikes, you're out. Try to run to first base as fast as you. Mm-hmm. It's just a silly little bit of sports business that gets done, you know, thousands of times a month in the sport. It's just kind of silly in some ways, and just one of the most beautiful things you'll ever see, to see a shortstop gather up a ball and throw it to first base. But all the other little ancillary things around there, you know, they're tweaking here and there. I guess it's no different than moving a fence in and out at a stadium. Have you ever heard of that? You know, these little tweaks and changes trying to give your team an edge. I guess that's sort of part of the game too. But in essence, I more prefer just leave it alone, let it be. Let's see where it goes. The instant replay, I think, is pretty cool that they do their best to try to figure out outer safe. But even with instant replay and all the efforts there and some umpire in the sky and, you know, waiting for a call from New York or something, they still really don't know outer safe. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me started on that. I heard, is this true? I thought I heard that now all AAA games will be done by robot umpires.
Yes, and I just,
yeah, and I cringe at the idea of MLB adopting that because, again, there's something about even just like seeing an umpire yell with the manager, throw back to the Orioles, an Earl Reaver, even more modern Buck Showalter. Like, I enjoy that aspect of the game, and I feel like you lose a little bit something every time you take a human out.
I agree with that 100%, 100% right there, completely. That's part of the deal, you know, and getting a human behind there to call balls and strike, that is absolutely part of the game. And robots will just kill that whole, that color, that that character of the game. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, hey, Mark, now, Steve. Yeah, I'm sorry, Josh. You have a...
Well, I was just going to plug the book one more time, that there's no reason for our listeners not to go grab this book, because it's got, you got almost 1,500 reviews on Amazon, and it just came out. And I'll say, it's almost all positive reviews. My favorite negative review is someone wrote in there, "I don't understand this. Maybe if you know how baseball works."
Yeah. Well, I would argue it's still a good human story, even outside of baseball. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the fact that it's so much inside baseball, for me, that gave it even more stars. Because that's what I love about this, is it's so grounded in baseball.
Yeah, and the nuance, the unwritten, the emotional, the analytics. Yeah.
But that it all takes place inside of baseball, and all those nuances of that setting is something why I know all of our listeners will love this book.
Well, and it's about a Baltimore pitcher who's really good. We don't see that very often in Baltimore. That's another reason to read the book.
Can I plug the fact that I'll be in Baltimore for a book event on April 26th. So I plan to go to a Red Sox game the night before that. So I'll be at Bird in the Hand Cafe on April 26th.
All right. Absolutely. All right.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely send people there. And when it gets closer, we'll make sure to push people towards there as well. I know you, on Twitter, you are Writer Stevens, so everyone should follow you there. And yeah, the book on Amazon right now, guys, you should grab it. It's on sale for under $12. And if you have Kindle Unlimited, it's free for your Kindle Unlimited plan. Yep. So definitely check that out.
Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate your reading it, and thanks for all your great, great questions. It was a blast.
Absolutely, Mark. We appreciate you taking the time, man. Thank you.
The NFL playoff action continues. We're one step closer to Super Bowl 57 and for the NFL divisional round. Check out DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. And new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all new and existing customers can get an even bigger payout with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. So boost your NFL winnings with a leg up to 100%. This weekend, we got playoffs. It's not going to be the Ravens, but hey, I'm down here in Jacksonville. So it's Duval County down here or whatever. It's the stupidest thing they cheer for in the world. But it's going to be fun to see a little up-and-coming Jags team face off against the Chiefs.
Yeah, they got Trevor Lawrence got the butterflies out of his stomach in the first half against the Chargers. What an insane game that was last week.
How do you throw four interceptions and not get pulled off and not get pulled and put a backup in a playoff game?
Well, because you're Trevor Lawrence.
Team stayed behind him, and he was able to pull this out.
Yeah, and I don't know if that story is
over at Waffle House.
Yeah, this I saw the video of him at Waffle House.
This guy is Mr. Jacksonville. No one fits this town as much as him. It's really special to see down here. I wish it was a Baltimore team, but it's fun to see Jacksonville do well.
Yeah, well, he's going up. Unfortunately for him, he's going up against the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, right. The best in the business. That's why the Patrick Mahomes Chiefs are 8.5-point favorites. Josh, who are you going with here? The underdog, the Jaguars, or are you
taking
the Chiefs?
I don't know if you heard, but $5 gets me $200 in free bets. I say it every week. So since I got that free, I still got some of that free bet money. So I'm definitely putting some of it on the Jags to upset the Chiefs. But let's be real. It might be better to play with some of these same day parlays rather than actually bet on the Jags this weekend.
Well, even if you just, if you don't do the money line, the Chiefs tend to not cover. That's their thing. They win, but sometimes they don't cover. Over a touchdown, 8.5 points seems like a lot of points for, a Jaguars who are a legit playoff team. I'll go with the Jaguars too. Take the points.
All right, so download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code SECTION336. New customers can bet $5 on the NFL divisional round and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with the code SECTION336. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Please play responsibly. For help, visit mdgamblinghelp.org or call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus, physically present in Maryland, eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. Bonus issued as free bets. See DraftKings.com/MD for full terms and conditions.
All right. The Ravens, by the way, covered. All right. If we're into gambling, and I think every team but the 49ers, but the Seahawks, I should say, covered, or every underdog covered or upset, except for the Seahawks. But the Ravens covered. Josh, thoughts on the Ravens game? Kind of a heartbreaking loss that we weren't totally optimistic, but it was a weird way to lose.
No, we knew that. I love this defense. I really love the defense this year, especially towards the end of the year, how this defense came together and kept Huntley, who had no business in these games. And even Huntley, when I look at Huntley, and yesterday he's having fun out there. He's making plays and making moves that are keeping them in it. And I look and I'm like, we have a backup quarterback and no wide receivers. No one lining up as a wide receiver should be a wide receiver in the NFL.
Sammy Watkins just cut by a non-playoff team. The backers, right. We just picked
these
them up.
These guys should not be, and that's who we've got going out there. And somehow we lose the game on a fluke QB sneak that the players screwed up and that our backup quarterback decided to jump instead of tuck the ball. I don't.
Yeah. He was listening to too much Michelle Obama. When they go low, we go high. No, when they go low, you go lower. He should have went low. He went high, like right. Michelle. He should have went low. And it was kind of a fluky thing. And it's sad way. But Josh, if he makes that, there's no doubt in my mind we win that game, right?
If we just caught up and tackled the big boy that ran all the way back,
Mark Andrews illegally blocked, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I saw, a little block in the back. If we knocked him down, we would have won that game because our defense was stepping up. Our defense was holding them down, getting them
Burrow
back,
is
getting
overrated.
Field goals.
Yeah.
Burrow has better wide receivers and was not getting the ball to them. Ravens were doing a great job. Also, I thought the Marcus Peters penalty was a little frustrating because the whole game is a chippy game back and forth. They're all pushing, shoving, hitting. And to call that was frustrating.
Yeah. But And we can rehash the game all you want.
We were expecting it doesn't matter.
I thought we were a better team. I thought we were a better team. We just kind of lost in a fluky thing, which happens because it's football. But I'm already at next year, and I know everyone. This is overreaction.
Who's our quarterback
Monday?
Who's the quarterback next year?
Josh, if Lamar comes back and we get one receiver, one really good veteran receiver, and Rashad Bateman comes back, I think we are super. And we bring back this defense. Right, maybe some small changes, but pretty much with this defense. And I think we're a Super Bowl contending team. I think we're a Super Bowl and fire the offense coordinator, bring out a competent offense coordinator. I think we're a Super Bowl contending team. That's all we got to do. It's not like we have to go to rebuild mode.
No, give Dobbins the ball. Dobbins proved him. He's a game.
Oh my gosh,
Dobbins have the ball.
I almost, Josh, I almost lost. Third and one when they handed to Mark Andrews. I lost my mind.
Was that third and one or fourth and one? It was supposed to be.
I don't know. He got it. But I know. Was like, what are you doing?
But it was like, it was like, oh, we need to get Mark Andrews in the game somehow because he's constantly double teamed. But that's not the way to do it.
Yeah. I loved that Dobbins was critical after the game, saying he should have gotten the ball.
Yes. Love it.
He scored a touch on the red zone. He didn't get another touch on the goal. I think Dobbins is right to be critical. That's where they messed up, whether it's Edwards or Dobbins. I don't care if the other team knows it's coming. That's the whole point. Our running game is good enough. You can know it's coming. Now try to stop us. These offensive coordinators try to get too cute with it. Just do what you do well, which is so frustrating. But you bring back Dobbins and Edwards, a good offensive line. I hope they bring back Lamar Jackson. We'll see what's there. But this is not a rebuild team. This is a team that's close to Super Bowl contending. We're good. We just need a couple pieces.
No, I think you sit down with Lamar. You try to get his head straight, and you franchise tag him for a year.
Try to get his head straight. You sit down with John Harbaugh. You try to get his head straight, and then you bring in Lamar, and you go for it.
I don't know. I think the coaching staff is frustrated at Lamar. The players are frustrated at Lamar. You've heard players speak out. You've heard John Harbaugh purposely not comment and avoid. I think
Josh, I don't care. In this relationship, who is more important? This is not an equal partnership. In this relationship, Lamar Jackson is more valuable to me than John Harbaugh. I'm sorry. If you got to bend over backwards for Lamar, you do it because he's your franchise quarterback. They're not equal partners here.
I don't know. When you have a defense like this, you said bring in a wide receiver, bring in Lamar. If you bring in a wide receiver and any quarterback that's a step above Huntley, aren't you good?
I'm not sure.
I mean, it's not Lamar. Lamar's special. But I'm saying this team gets into the playoffs with Huntley, it can get into the playoffs with someone a little bit better as well.
I don't know. You see Kirk Cousins, 4th and 8 with the game on the line, throw a 3-yard pass to his tight end. That was some Joe Flacco stuff right there.
That reminded me of Joe Flacco, yes.
But
Joe Flacco got us a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, we've been hashtag blessed to have Joe Flacco lead right to Lamar Jackson. But just look at the Commanders franchise. They've been searching for a quarterback since, I don't know. I don't know how long they've been searching for quarterbacks since Danny Werfel. That's a bad reference. The Colts, since Andrew Luck, been searching for a quarterback. So you have teams. It's hard sometimes.
Yeah, you look at the Broncos, constantly struggling over there. Quarterback.
Yeah.
Trade for Russell Wilson still doesn't help him out.
Yep, the only time he got a Super Bowl is because that 1 year of Peyton Manning at the end of his career. Yeah.
Right. So
it's true. I don't know if you want to go down that route, but the Ravens, your boy Steve Bisciotti's got to make a decision here. But Josh, day one,
that's going to be the whole offseason.
You think it's going to be the whole offseason?
Well, why isn't Greg Roman gone today then?
Yeah, he's gone tomorrow.
You think so this week?
Yeah, and what do you call it where the players come and work out that the draft picks,
the combine. Combine, but that's wrong. Combine. There we go.
The combine, the draft combine. I think we'll know at the draft combine what the Ravens will do for next year. If Lamar's still here at the combine, then we're rolling with him next year, franchise or contract. If he's, I think if they're going to trade him, it'll be at the combine because they're going to get some draft picks and then make that move. But I think we'll find out then.
Yeah.
I mean, if Lamar wants to play for us, I want him. But if Lamar doesn't want to play for us, then you have to trade him. It's that simple. But in my mind, I want Lamar more than I want. If Lamar says, I really can't work with the coaching staff, then get rid of the coaching staff.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with it. But we'll see.
Kind of. I think John Harbaugh is frustrated, but doesn't lose. It's hard. You want Lamar on your team. If Lamar can play, you want him on your team. And I think the frustration is that it's not a Derek Carr situation where he left the team because he was a distraction, because the coaches didn't want him. Here, I think everybody wants Lamar on the field, and the frustration is that Lamar's not playing with him.
Well, there's so much weird stuff. There's Mike Preston coming out with accusations that he's lazy. There's John Harbaugh saying he's going to be back in a week, two at the most, and then hearing nothing about his injury until weeks, a month later, Lamar Jackson tweets it out. There's Lamar Jackson not traveling with the team. There's Sammy Watkins having quotes in the Washington Post about him. There's Michael Vick talking about he should put a brace on and just play. There's Marlon Humphrey saying he can't walk without a limp in the locker room. There's just, I don't know who to believe. I don't know what's going on. It's such a weird situation.
And then
situation.
You got John Harbaugh saying, oh, I can't talk about it.
Yeah, refusing to talk. He's saying, but he doesn't talk about anything anyway. He says about all injuries.
Right, exactly. So, it's so weird. So it's a lot of drama, a little interesting. I did see a storyline on Pro Football Talk tonight all about that the officials missed the illegal block in the back on Mark Andrews on Sam Hubbard's fumble return.
Which, yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, Huntley shouldn't fumble. Huntley should go low.
Huntley should have never been in that position.
Huntley should hand the ball to Dobbins. Huntley should hand the ball to Dobbins.
Dobbins, you give it to Dobbins, the Ravens win.
Yeah, you give it to Dobbins, the Ravens win. That's true.
So
I think, Josh, I'll say this. I would be surprised if, come the first preseason game, Lamar and John Harbaugh are both there. I think it could be a situation where someone's got – there's not room for both of us. I'm just going – it's going to be an interesting offseason.
You know, when you take care of something good, that good thing takes care of you too.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't take care of that thing,
I'll take Lamar's words today on his Instagram post.
Yeah, and I don't think that's highly inappropriate.
I think there's a lot of talk going on out there, and I will say,
I can't wait for it.
As much as I love Lamar, part of Lamar's problem is Lamar. He doesn't have an agent. Everyone around him is his family, who have probably been building him up for years, and it's the hype, the Lamar hype. As fun as it is as fans for the Lamar hype is also in Lamar's head.
Maybe. I mean, Roquan Smith just signed with the Ravens. He doesn't have an agent either. So, I mean, I don't think we can know.
But he got that deal done.
He got it done. He got it done.
He's on the field
for Lamar.
Making a difference.
Yeah. Mostly it's going to be an interesting offseason.
All right. Yeah, that might be the most Ravens talk we did in a while. But I can't wait. I mean, here we are mid-January. Pitchers and catchers report in a month. We've had so much content on 336. We haven't even talked about promotions yet. You know how much I love promotions.
We'll get to it next week.
There's a bunch of bobbleheads. We got to get to it next week. Yeah.
International signings. We'll get to it next week.
Yeah, that has a huge list. We didn't do so good in the last trivia thing podcast. Oh. So we'll get... Hopefully we can do a little better performance this week.
Okay, fine, Josh. Fine.
Exactly. I don't expect to do any better.
Well, but I have a busy schedule. Because of that. I don't know how long I'm going to keep on doing this. I got a busy schedule here.
Oh, you want to lose so we get out of it.
I'm just saying. I got to do the podcast this week. Then another night a week, I got to go on and do the Family Feud.
I know.
But the double elimination. A little bit much for me.
The fun thing is we're talking baseball. So like we had Tyler Wells last week, Mark Stevens this week. We've got only like three, four more podcasts, and then we're pitchers and catchers.
And then we'll start talking about how fat Chris Tilden is for spring training. Can't wait.
Yeah. Isn't he working out somewhere? Isn't he doing a showcase?
Tilden? He was. They said he was throwing like 90 miles per hour or something.
Any chance we can bring him back here?
Well, I was shocked. I think it said he was like 34 or something. I thought for sure he was 50. The age surprised me. He was like mid-30s.
Well, remember when Jim Palmer tried to come back in like the 90s?
I remember when Jamie Moyer, I think it was, tried to come back. Or you know who else tried to come back is Rafael Palmeiro. He tried to come back. So you have these veterans.
I forgot about Palmeiro.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Orioles signed someone this week.
Is that going to be, I think, a Family Feud question from Ryan? Orioles players who tried to make a comeback? If it is, we're ready for it. Palmer.
It would be.
Palmero.
I'll listen to this episode, and I'll listen to the other guys, and I'll know all the answers when it's other people playing.
That's how I was feeling.
And then when it's us, I'm like, I don't know.
That's how I feel too.
But hey, there's still a chance we get Michael Walker before next year.
Okay.
Next week, whatever it is.
Okay. Okay. Right,
let's get out of here.
We're going to do a special episode.
Yeah.
We get Michael Walker.
Yeah, we will. Yep. I gotta get out of here. I gotta start making my inappropriate questions here.
Okay.
Are you from here?
Yeah.
Are you from here? That'll be one too.
Highly inappropriate. Are you from here?
Highly inappropriate. Yep.
What real people face. Oh, and then the other quote he said in there, just to wrap this up, he said, "You want to write that down." Okay. I think we said with 70% ownership. You want to write that down.
Right. Right.
And Dan was like, I already know that.
I get paid to cover your team. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't know that unless you check the books. We all know he owns the majority. Who cares if it's 80 or 70%?
Right. All right. Let's get out of here. Go to iTunes. Write us a review.
Yeah.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram. Yeah. Get a copy of The Fireballer on Amazon. All right. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at Section336. You can follow Josh on Twitter.
At Josh Taroka.
Thanks for listening, boys and girls. As always, go O's.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.